Act 7. 199. Exterior. The Town Hall. Night. Jack Carver was right. The islanders without wood stoves for heat, or those who live in the path of a possible storm surge at high tide, are already coming in for shelter. Some arrive in four-wheel drives, some come on snowmobiles or in snowcats. Some are on snowshoes and skis. Even with the howl of the wind, we can hear the bull-throated roar of the town hall jenny. Approaching along the sidewalk are Jonas Stanhope and his wife, Joanna. They aren't kids, but they're healthy, even athletic-looking, like the actors in the Ensure commercials. They are on snowshoes, and each has a pull line. Behind them is a chair secured to a child's sled, making it into a kind of one-person sleigh. Sitting in the chair, bundled up in robes and an enormous fur hat, is Cora Stanhope, Jonas's mother. She's about 80 and looks as regal as Queen Victoria on her throne. Jonas. You okay, Mom? Cora. Fine as the flowers in May. Jonas. But what about you, Joe? Joanna. Rather grim. I'll make it. They turn into the parking lot beside the town hall. This lot is rapidly filling up with a variety of snow-friendly vehicles. Pairs of skis and snowshoes have been left upright in the snowbank in front of the building. The building itself is, courtesy of its big generator, lit up like an ocean liner on a stormy sea, an island of safety and relative comfort on a wild night. Of course, the Titanic probably looked the same way before it hit the iceberg. Folks walk toward the steps, talking and chattering with nervous excitement. We have built up a relatively large cast of characters, and here we get some payoff, recognizing old friends from the cluster at Martha's house and the shoppers at the market. We spy Jill and Andy Robichaud getting out of a four-wheel drive. As Jill undoes the straps holding five-year-old Harry in his car seat, Harry's one of Molly's daycare kids, Andy slogs gamely over to the Stanhope family. Andy.
How you doing, Stanhopes? Some wild night, huh?
Jonas.
It sure is. We're fine, Andy.
But Joanna, while far from death's door, is also a long way from fine. She's panting hard and uses the brake to bend over and clutch the legs of her snow pants. Andy.
Let me spell you there, Joanna.
Cora, Her Imperial Majesty.
Joanna is fine, Mr. Robichaud. Just needs to get her breath. Don't you, Joanna?
Joanna gives her elderly mother-in-law a smile that says, thanks, right, and oh, how I'd like to stuff a parking meter up your scrawny old butt. Andy sees it. Andy.
Jilly could use some help with the baby, Joe, would you? I got this. Really.
Joanna, very grateful.
You bet.
Andy grabs Joanna's half of the harness. As Joanna goes to Jill, Cora gives her daughter-in-law a look as icy as the storm, one that says, quitter, loud and clear. Davy Hopewell, his parents, and Mrs. Kingsbury pile out of a big old Suburban. Jonas.
Well, Andy, what do you say? Ready?
Andy.
Surely, God love him. Mush.
They resume pulling the old lady toward the town hall. Cora rides with her blade-thin New England nose regally lifted. Jill and Joanna walk along behind, chatting. Harry, so bundled up he looks like the stay-puffed marshmallow man, trudges next to his mom, holding her hand. 200. Interior, the town office. Night. Ursula, Tess Marchant, and Tavia Godso are checking people in by handing them clipboards and getting them to sign the names of family members who plan to spend the night in the lower level of the town hall. Behind the women are four men, looking important but not doing much. There's Robbie Beals, the town manager, plus the three town selectmen, George Kirby, Bert Soames, and Henry Bright. Henry is the husband of Carla Bright and is currently holding his son, another daycare pupil, in his arms. Frank is fast asleep. Again, we see faces that we know coming in. An island is a small community. There are no kids older than daycare age. The big kids all got stranded on the mainland side of the reach. Ursula, plenty harried.
Sign in, everybody.
We have to know who's here, so please sign in before you go downstairs. She casts an impatient look at the men, who are basically standing around and gossiping. 201. Interior. Angle on Robbie and the selectman. Bert Soames.
So, what'd he say?
Robbie.
What could he say? Hell, everybody north of Casco Bay knows Peter Godso wholesales 9 pounds of pot for every pound of lobster.
He casts an eye on Ursula and Tavia. The latter is rummaging in a supply cupboard for pillows. Work Robbie wouldn't do unless you stuck a gun in his ear. Robbie.
I don't blame him. Hell, ain't he got a house full of women to support?
Bert Soames chortles. George Kirby and Henry Bright exchange a more doubtful look. They're not completely comfortable with the meanness of the gossip. George Kirby.
Question is, Robbie, how'd that fellow know?
Robbie rolls his eyes as if to say, what a dope.
Robbie. They're likely in business together. Why would a fella kill a harmless old lady like Martha Clarendon in the first place, lest he was stoned? Tell me that, George Kirby.
Henry Bright.
That doesn't explain how he could know Cat Withers is up in Derry for an abortion.
Woman's voice.
Ursula, are there more blankets?
Ursula.
Robbie Beals, Henry Bright, you boys think you could go downstairs and bring some more blankets out of that back storeroom? Or aren't you far enough along with your politicking yet?
Robbie and Henry walk over, Robbie with a contemptuous grin, Henry looking ashamed that he hasn't been more help already.
Robbie. What's the matter, Ursula? That time of the month, dear?
She gives him a look of utter contempt and brushes hair back from her face. Tess.
Don't you think it's about time to blow the whistle and bring him in, Robbie?
Robbie.
Looks like enough of them are coming in on their own. As for the rest, they'll write it out just fine. All this is a bunch of foolishness, far as I'm concerned.
Do you think our grandmothers and grandfathers all got together in the town hall when it stormed, like a bunch of cave people scared of lightning?
Ursula.
No, they used the Methodist Church. I've got a picture I could show you, Storm of 27. I can point out your granddad in it if you want. He looks like he's stirring a pot of soup. Nice to know there was at least one fellow in your family knew how to pitch in.
Robbie looks ready to come back on her, but before he can, Henry Bright.
Come on, Robbie.
Henry, still holding his sleeping child, heads downstairs. George Kirby follows. Robbie's effectively shut up. George is easily 20 years older than he is, and he's not above getting blankets. Robbie will at least have to go along and look busy. Ursula, Tavia, and Tess look at each other and kind of roll their eyes as the men leave. Meanwhile, people continue to come in by twos and threes, and the storm continues to roar outside. Ursula.
Sign in before you go downstairs, folks. Please. There's room for everybody, but we have to know who we have.
Molly Anderson comes in, brushing snow from her hair and holding Ralphie by the hand. Molly.
Ursula, have you seen Mike?
Ursula.
No, but I'll be able to catch his car radio if he calls in, I think.
Points at the CB.
It's not good for much else tonight. Take off your coat, pitch in.
Molly.
How's it going?
Ursula.
Oh, we're having a ball. Hi, Ralphie.
Ralphie.
Hi.
Molly kneels on the wet floor and begins the job of peeling Ralphie out of his snowsuit. People continue to come in as she does so. Outside, the snow swirls and the wind howls. 202. Exterior. The Volunteer Fire Department. Night. The pumper we saw being washed at the top of the show has long since been put away, but now the fire station's side door opens and Ferd Andrews struggles out, pulling up the hood of his coat. He looks downhill at 203. Exterior. Godso, fish and lobster. Night. The tide is almost high. The mainland has disappeared in a curtain of gray and black. The reach is running with waves so big they're nightmarish. These slosh rhythmically over the end of the dock, pelting the long shed with spray. 204. Interior. Got so fish and lobster. Night. We're in a long, high storage area stacked with lobster traps, crates, and fishing gear. One entire wall is hung with slickers, waterproofs, high boots. The sound of the storm is muted, but only a little. Spray pelts the windows. The camera moves down an aisle of traps, then past a long tank full of lobsters. The camera swings around the end of the tank, and a few rats scutter out of sight. Here, in a dusty little passage between the tank and the wall, is stored a long object covered with blankets. The wind shrieks. The building creaks. A huge splash of spray hits one of the windows and shatters it. Wind, water, and snow swirl in. The wind strips the blanket back from the end of the long object, and we see stacked bales of pot, all neatly wrapped in sheets of plastic. The traps hung overhead clack back and forth. Sound of another window breaking. 205. Exterior. The little tall market. We can hear the faint chug of the generator, and a few lights shine bravely. The only vehicles still parked in front are Molly's little car and a snow-caked pickup with Godso fish and lobster on the side. 206. Interior. Crossword puzzle on PowerBook screen. Close-up. It's mostly filled in. Hatch adds a word. 207. Interior. The constable's office. Night. Hatch stretches, then stands. In the cell, the noge sits as before, back to the wall and looking out from between his knees. Hatch. Got to use the can. You want a coffee or a cold drink, Pete? Pete doesn't respond at first. The sheet of paper he pulled from the bulletin board is in his lap, but turned over so the print side, with its red tide warning, is face up. Peter's eyes are wide and blank. Hatch. Peter? Earth to Peter. Hatch waves a hand in front of Peter's face. Peter blinks, and awareness, or a semblance of it, seeps back into his eyes. He looks up at Hatch. Peter. What? Hatch. Just asked if you wanted a soda or a coffee. Peter. No. Thanks, though. Hatch starts toward the door, then turns. You all right? Peter, after a beat. Yeah. Spent all day battening down for the storm, and now I guess I'm almost asleep with my eyes open. Sorry. Hatch. Well, hang in there. Jack Carver and Kirk Freeman should be along in 20 minutes or so. Hatch grabs a magazine to read in the can and leaves. 208. Interior. Linoge. Close up. His eyes darken. He looks at Peter. His lips move soundlessly. 209. Interior. Peter. Close up. He's totally blank again. Hypnotized. Suddenly, the shadow of Linoge's cane appears on his face. Peter looks up at... 210. Interior. An overhead beam from Peter's point of view. The cane is hooked over it. The bloody wolf's head snarls. 211. Interior, the constable's office. Night. Peter gets up and slowly crosses the room. The notice he was writing on trailing from one hand. He walks directly beneath the cane. Linoge sits on the cell's cot watching him, only his weird eyes moving. Peter stops at a wall-mounted cabinet and opens it. There are all sorts of tools inside. There's also a coil of rope. He takes it. 212. Exterior. Godso fish and lobster. Night. A gigantic wave rolls out of the reach, smashes the end of the town dock, and chews off the end of Peter Godso's building. We can hear the snap of wood even above the storm. 213. Exterior. Ferd Andrews, by the fire department side door. Ferd Andrews. Oh, my God! Raises his voice. Lloyd! Lloyd, you gotta see this! 214. Interior. The fire station garage with Lloyd Wichman. Night. The two island pumpers are apple green. The passenger window of one is partly open. Hanging from it is the bloody wolf's head of Linoge's cane. Standing nearby, looking as blank as Peter Godso, is Lloyd. In one hand, he has a small can of red paint. In the other is a brush. He's working with the care of a Manet or Van Gogh. Ferv Andrews. Voiceover.
Lloyd, it's going to take Godso's. It's going to take the whole dock.
Lloyd Wishman pays no attention. Goes on painting. 215. Interior. The constable's office. A high angle. The cane no longer hangs over the beam, but a coil of rope is flung up and over the place where it was. In the background, Linoge sits in his cell, face predatory, eyes rolling with red and black. 216. Exterior. Godso's Fish and Lobster. Night. Another huge wave smashes into the town dock, tearing a lot more of it away and capsizing a small boat someone foolishly left tied there. It also takes another huge bite out of the warehouse. 217. Interior. Godso's Fish and Lobster. Night. We can see right outside through a ragged hole in the end of the building, the amputated dock and the heaving waves of the reach. Now, another of these big ones rolls toward the camera, inundating what's left of the dock and smashing into the warehouse. Lobster traps are lifted and sucked away. The lobster tank is overturned, and lobsters are freed by the dozen, a sudden and unexpected commutation of their death sentence. And, as the big wave retreats, bales of pot also float out of the hole at the end of the building. 218. Exterior. Outside the fire department, with Ferd Andrews. Ferd Andrews, shouting.
You better come, Lloyd. If you want to see something you ain't never gonna see again. She's a-goin'. She's a-goin'.
219. Interior. The fire station, with Lloyd Wishman. Lloyd is also a-goin', as it happens. As he finishes painting, the camera moves around, showing us what is written in big red capitals up the side of the green pumper, overlaying the gold letters that read, Little Tall Island, VFD, is this message. Give me what I want, and I'll go away. Ferd Andrews, voiceover.
Get out here, Lloyd. The whole shebang's going into the drink.
Taking no notice, Lloyd sets the paint can down on the running board of the pumper and puts the brush neatly across the top. As he does these things, we see that the cane that was hanging from the partly open window is gone. Or maybe it was never there in the first place. Maybe it was just in Lloyd Wishman's mind. Lloyd moves to the side of the pumper and opens one of the tool storage compartments. He takes out a fire axe. 220. Interior. The constable's office. Night. Peter Godso, eyes blank, is standing on a chair. The end of the rope he threw over the beam has been fashioned into a noose, and the noose is around his neck. Pinned to his shirt is his homework, the sheet with Give Me What I Want written all over it, plus the cane drawings. Written in extra big letters at the top, like a title, is Give Me What I Want and I'll Go Away. 221. Interior. Linoge. Close-up. Lips moving, chanting silently, eyes big black holes, shot through with red fire. 222. Interior. The fire station. Night. Lloyd stands with the keen blade of the axe pointing at the center of his face. He's gripping the handle far up on the shaft, the kind of grip you want if you're going to chop kindling out back of the house, or your own face in two. 223. Interior. Linoge, close-up. Lips moving faster now. Weird eyes wider. Hands clenched into fists in front of him. 224. Exterior. The ocean side of the fire station with Ferd. His face is filled with awe and terror. His mouth hangs open. Ferd Andrews.
My sainted hat!
225. Exterior. The town dock with what remains of Godso's. Bearing down on it through the howling snow is a huge wave, almost a tidal wave. 226. Interior. The constable's office, with Peter's feet. They kick away the chair with a clatter, then begin to jitter. 227. Exterior. The oncoming wave. Night. It dwarfs the dock and the warehouse. 228. Interior. The market, with Hatch. He stops pouring his coffee and turns toward the constable's office door, reacting to the clatter of the chair. Hatch. Peter? 229. Interior. The axe, close up. It swings out of the frame, and we hear an unpleasant sound. It's like someone slapping mud with the flat of his hand. Chomp. 230. Interior. Got so fish and lobster. Knife. We're looking out at the reach, but suddenly the view is blotted out by the oncoming wave. There's nothing to be seen through the broken-off stump of the warehouse but surging gray water. It smashes into Godso's, and suddenly the camera is underwater. A smashed trap, a bale of pot, and a lobster with its claws still pegged go floating past in gusts of bubbles. 231. Exterior. The town dock. Night. What remains is inundated and torn completely away. The retreating wave carries off a tangle of boats, ropes, cleats, rubber boat bumpers, and Godso's shingled roof. Maybe we see part of the sign, Godso Fish and Lobster, before it all disappears into the bellowing blizzard. 232. Interior, the town hall, with Ursula, Tavia, Tess, etc. All the bustle is momentarily silent. The crackle and hiss of the CV is very loud. Everyone is turned toward the door. Ralphie.
Mommy, what's wrong?
Molly.
Nothing, hon.
Jonas. What in God's name was it? Cora.
The town dock, setting off to sea.
Robbie comes up the stairs, followed by George, Henry Bright, and Bert Soames. Robbie's bluster and swagger are gone. Robbie.
Ursula, blow the whistle.
233. Exterior, outside the fire department with Ferd. Knight. He's as excited and dismayed as a man who has just seen Satan peering at him from around a tree trunk. He turns and runs back to the door of the firehouse. 234. Interior, the constable's office, featuring the door. Hatch comes through the door, styrofoam cup of Joe in one hand. Hatch.
Pete, you okay? I heard.
His face fills with startled horror. His eyes go upward, presumably to the face of the man who has hung himself from the beam. The coffee drops from his hand, hits the floor, splashes his boots. 235. Interior, the firehouse, with Ferd. Ferd Andrews.
Lloyd, where the hell are you? Did you go to sleep or what?
He starts around the rear of the closest bumper, then stops. There's a pair of boots sticking out. Ferd.
Lloyd? Lloyd?
Slowly, not really wanting to, he goes the rest of the way around to where he can see his partner. For a moment he's silent, so shocked he is unable to vocalize. Then Ferd screams like a woman. 236. Interior. Hatch. Close up. His face is frozen in an expression of utter horror. 237. Interior. The side of the pumper. Give me what I want, and I'll go away. Painted in blood-red capital letters. 238. Interior. The sign around Peter Godso's neck. Give me what I want. Give me what I want. Give me what I want, and I'll go away. Plus those creepy little dancing canes. 239. Interior. The screen of Hatch's power book. Close up. The answers he filled in are gone. Now, filling the crossword grid are the words, give me what I want, and I'll go away. Across, down, interlocking at every point, and in the center of every black square is a little white cane icon. 240. Interior. Linoge. Extreme close-up. Grinning. The sharp tips of his teeth showing. Slow dissolve to 241. Exterior. The center of town. High angle. Night. It's mostly dark, except for the town hall, and now the storm emergency signal begins to blow. Two shorts, one long. A pause, and then, once again, take shelter. The image of Linoge lingers, superimposed over the snowy town and perhaps suggesting there will be no shelter for the inhabitants of Little Tall Island. Not tonight. Perhaps not ever again. At last, Linoge's image fades out, and we do the same. This ends part one.